is now time for the program titled Local Folk here on Portsmouth Community Radio. I'm your host, Steve Carrigan, and I'm bringing people and events from the local folk music scene. I just want to let you know also that you are tuned in to 106.1 FM WSCALP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. Please note that the views expressed on this program are those of the individuals who speak them and not necessarily of Portsmouth Community Radio, its Board of Trustees, members, volunteers, or underwriters. It's not necessarily their opinion at all. It is between me and my guest. Well, stay tuned here on Local Folk as I help to convey the music and stories of my guests who are graciously here to share with you a bit about their personal histories and musical selves, and hopefully you may even be inspired to get out there and get involved in one way or another. But before I introduce my guest this evening, I have a few announcements followed by the weather, community bulletins, and a word from our underwriters. You know, I think my daughter Saoirse is listening tonight, so I just wanted to have a little shout out to my little 2-year-old daughter Saoirse, who I think is listening tonight. Hello from your daddy. I'd like to let you know that programming on Portsmouth Community Radio is made possible by you, our members, and by our underwriters, which include the New Hampshire Gazette, Daystar Computer Services, the Portsmouth Herald, and the Press Room. Well, that is it for my announcements right now, and I am ready to go. I just have to share a little story as I introduce tonight's guest. I met tonight's guest for the first time in one of the more awkward moments of my life. You guessed it, dance class. My then girlfriend and still love of my life, Elizabeth, had convinced me that it would be fun for me to join in with her in a Celtic dancing class, and I tried to convince her that I had two left feet, but she wouldn't hear any of it, so I was tripping, floundering, and sweating, and prancing around, and I was feeling self-conscious. I was having a fantastic time doing so, in part because I was with Elizabeth, and also in part because of my great teacher, who is here tonight. I have to admit, my time in dance class, it was short. I think I did it 2 or 3 times, and I'm not even sure if my guest tonight remembers that I was even there. But
I do.
But she's totally incredibly busy with all kinds of other aspects, many other aspects of Celtic culture, as well as being a dancer and a dance instructor of Ceilidh, step, and set dancing. She plays traditional Irish music on the harp and sings in both Irish and English. She sings in the Seanós style, which is ornamented and unaccompanied. Hopefully she'll give us an example of that today. And also accompanies herself on the harp, and she studied with some of the great harp players and received accolades around the world, including right here in America at the Smithsonian Folklife Festival, where she was represented. It looks like she's been releasing CDs with her band Reganta since 1998, and she's also the driving force behind the New England Irish Harp Orchestra. I'd go on, but we have a lot to talk about, so.
You put me to sleep.
We have to talk directly. I'm talking about Regina Delaney. Regina, welcome to Local Folk.
Hey, Steve. Thanks a lot. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you very much. You do so much with the Celtic music and dance. My first question is, did you grow up with this music and this culture going on?
No. Actually, my family's Irish, Irish-American, though, and I'm third and fourth generation here in the States. And so we listened more to what I would consider Irish-American music, the green alligators and the long neck geese, the unicorn, those kind of things, and Danny Boy. But I always kind of felt an affinity for Ireland, even when I was younger. Nobody else in my family shared that. I have no idea where I got that from. But when my children, I was then, I guess, around the early 90s, I started singing and playing the baron in some local sessions. And my children were taking piano lessons, and the piano teacher happened to have a folk harp in his studio one day when I went. And I said, gee, I've always been interested in that. And he said, well, here, take it home. Go play with it. So I had taken piano as a child. And so I had a rudimentary knowledge of music. And he kind of showed me just around the harp a little bit. And I brought it home and fell in love with it, but realized after about maybe of having it a month or less that it was way bigger than I was, and I needed to get a teacher. And so there weren't any local Irish teachers around here, and I knew that that's what I wanted to do. But I did study, so I studied classical for 3 years with Stephanie Curcio, and it was great. I mean, I learned, you know, interesting technique and really learned about the harp, but really knew still Irish was what I wanted.
How long ago was this that you started?
You know, it's funny. I knew you were going to ask me that question, and I was trying to figure out when it was, and I'm thinking that it was either 1994 or 1995.
Somewhere. 94 or 95 that you started
playing the harp. Yeah, I was in my 40s when I started playing the harp.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I was working that time. I had two jobs, as a nurse and an engineer, and then I started playing the harp. So.
As a nurse and an engineer?
Yeah, I'm one of those people that couldn't make up my mind.
Definitely not. As you must, well, I mean, it sounds like you were using both sides of your brain.
I was. Maybe not effectively, but... Definitely using them. And then, you know, the harp just kind of fell into my lap, and it just changed my life.
It fell really into your lap in about 1995, mm-hmm. and you said that you went through, you know, your formative years with only having played the piano a little bit, or had you been singing at all?
I'd been singing, yeah. I think I was born singing. Yeah.
Okay.
And a lot of people in my family sang, so my father had a beautiful Irish tenor voice, absolutely gorgeous. But we did mostly, you know, choir singing and, like, Broadway musicals, that sort of thing.
Was it one of those things around the piano, mm-hmm. playing music with the family?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it would be that.
So do you think that your family had an influence on your early...
Oh, definitely, yeah. Definitely. I mean, I probably could sing it when I was younger, every Broadway musical that ever came into being. I just loved it, you know.
So you were a big fan of Broadway.
I was a big fan of Broadway musicals,
and
yeah.
And you were dancing, or when did you start dancing?
Well... That's interesting. I was going to be a ballet dancer. That was going to be my career. I danced with the Garden State. I lived in New Jersey, and I danced with the Garden State Ballet Company, and that was going to, I wanted to be a professional ballet dancer. But I injured my back a little bit when I was in high school, and that kind of ended that career for me.
Okay, but when you were younger, you still had an intimate relationship with music, just in terms of being a dancer. What, I mean, there, and I may be jumping the gun a little bit, but between dancing and performing music, I mean, they're kind of a different dynamic, wouldn't you say?
Well, they are, but in Irish music, they go hand in hand. And I think that it benefits a musician if they understand the dance, because in traditional Irish music, it's predominantly dance music that you're playing. So when I'm teaching my students who are not involved in Irish dance, I'll make them get up and learn a polka or learn a jig or learn a reel step, because so they can feel where the beat is in the music. And I teach the Irish harp at Phillips Exeter Academy, and I embarrass the living daylights out of my students, because I'll say, this is a hornpipe, let's go out in the hall, you're going to learn how to dance a hornpipe.
Uh-oh. And
they're
boy.
Good, they go along with it, but I think, you know, they are so connected, and I think the musicians that have a knowledge of the dance step are really just, it just comes across in their music. They know when to put the emphasis, and not that you have to dance to be a great Irish musician. That's of course not true, but I really think it adds to it.
I mean, I started singing and playing music for the sole intention of never having to get up and dance.
See, you might come back to dance class yet, Steve.
I should just say, boy, it was fun. I mean, you really should go down there and do it. I didn't find that I was successful at it, but my now wife, Elizabeth, she thought it was like the greatest thing in the world, and I really didn't even have to move my feet in the right way, really. You know, it was the beginner class after
mm-hmm.
all.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play. You're going to play some harp for us, and we're going to play some fantastic things that you brought in as well, but you brought in some dance music, and I just want to talk about that, because it sounds like dance was the root or sort of the basis, you know, with a little bit of the music on, but you were knew dance before you were playing music. And
well, in the Irish tradition, no, they both happened at pretty much the same time.
Oh, okay. You learned ballet, mm-hmm. and then when you picked up Irish harp is when you started looking at Irish dance
as
well?
Yes, yes, I did. My it all happened around the same time. And back at that time was when the Seacoast Irish Cultural Association was formed. And we brought up a dance instructor from Massachusetts to come. And that's when I started dance class. And my daughter and I started them together. And again, that was in the mid-90s. And I hadn't done Irish dance before that.
That's amazing to me. All right. So, and
so I think the cut that you're going to put on is music by Matt Cunningham, and this is set dancing music. So
set dancing music.
And set dances are done in groups of eight, four couples.
Okay.
Kind of the predecessor of square dancing. So because you follow moves, predetermined moves. There's hundreds of set dances, and set dancing is done worldwide. Absolutely,
okay.
Worldwide.
And this is not Riverdance?
They do actually some of it in Riverdance. When they're doing the group dancing in Riverdance, a lot of the moves that they're doing come from set dances.
Okay.
Okay, so it's not solo in so much as the other stuff.
Well, I'm going to put this on and see what, and you can just explain a little bit. It sounds kind of fast.
This is very fast. This is the Connemara set. And this is usually the first set that a lot of people learn because it's not as difficult as some of the other ones. Some of the other sets are very intricate moves, but this isn't that intricate, and it's a lot of fun, and it is fast.
Do you call it?
In class, yeah.
What would you tell people to do right now?
Well, the top couples would probably be advancing and retiring twice.
I can do that.
Okay, and then they're doing what I call teacups around each other. Where each couple is spinning around themselves, and they're spinning around the other couple.
I can do that. I did that.
And then they might swing for eight.
Swing. Yes, yeah. I remember now.
Yes, you remember that?
Yeah. I swung.
And then there'd be the ladies' chain. You know,
okay.
And the side couples would repeat what the tops did after they were done.
Okay, well, that's like four moves.
Yeah, that's in that particular figure, that's about all there is. There's always a lead around to start and turn around, come back, and swing. And then you do the figures. So in most of them, it starts with the lead around, although there are one or two figures where you start with a circle, where everybody circles, holds hands in a circle and advances.
Holds hands in a circle. I can do that, too.
Yes, you can.
Listen, folks, this is a dance that even I, your host, can do. Let's listen to this for just a moment. This is the Connemara set?
The Connemara set.
Okay, very good. Oh, darn it. Hold on a moment. We lost our Connemara. There's our Connemara. Listening to Local Folk, I'm your host, Steve Carrigan, and I'm with Regina Delaney of Reganta, of the New England Irish Harp Orchestra. She's also a teacher. She does all kinds of things. I mentioned Riverdance earlier, and I said that because somebody told me, I had an Ilan pipe player on the other day that said it was one of the best things that happened for his music. What do you think of that? Was probably happening back in the 90s, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Was that of any influence to you?
Oh, it was huge influence. And you know, there are pros and cons to everything. And one of the things I always think that Riverdance did, which was a wonderful thing, is that it brought Irish dance on center stage. And it gave a venue for all of these people who had spent their life studying this art to make a living at it. You know, prior to Riverdance, you got to be maybe 18 or 19, you'd go to college. That was it. You didn't dance anymore after that. You taught, and only very few people would do that. So this gave people the opportunity for something they had worked so hard at to actually use it. There's a local man now, his name is John Grimes, fantastic dancer, and he started dancing just at the same time I did and my daughter did. Went on to be a world championship dancer and dances with Riverdance now, which is wonderful. It's just so cool that he can use and take what is his passion and work at that. So I think that's the really positive thing about Riverdance. I think the negative thing about Riverdance is it just made it really very Hollywood, and you know, now the dresses and the makeup and the tanning and all the stuff that goes into it. And for my mind, I'm an old fogey when it comes to that. I really am. I will be the first one to admit it. I just don't like any of that stuff.
Is that what's happening? Is that somehow trickling down?
Amazing. Yes. Yeah. I mean, now, prior to all the competitions, the Fashana that they all go to, the girls put tanning stuff all over them.
They do?
Yeah.
I didn't even think Irish girls were tan.
Well, that would be a point now, wouldn't it? I just don't get me started, because we could just talk about that for the whole. My daughter's the same way too, because she kind of got out of it when that started happening.
That was her fair skin was white as milk.
Right. It's now it's crispy golden. I have no idea. So you know, as far as I'm concerned, that was the downside. But I think all in all, it was it just brought Irish traditional music and dance onto the world stage.
To the forefront. But mm-hmm. it brought it in a way. I mean, it adapted the music and made it into... I mean, you said you grew up listening to musicals.
Mm-hmm.
And here, I mean, the Riverdance was not a musical, but wasn't it sort of a la...
Really, yeah. I think it kind of was. Actually, it's got your song and your dance. So I guess I never thought of it in that way, but it kind of does fall into a musical category.
So big stage production at the very least. Yeah. And I think that the big thing was that they added a lot of bigger drums to it. Is that, what is the big difference between the music that they're playing in that and the music that that you play, is it like what we just played right here?
You know, when they're playing the traditional Irish music there, it's traditional Irish music, you know, maybe with a little jazziness thrown in, but it's traditional Irish music. And then they have the Spanish music and the Russian music. So I would say it's traditional.
Oh, so they do that all over the place.
I know.
Now.
It's just, Bill Whale, he composed some beautiful pieces for it, which were really nice.
So I was going to ask I don't want to keep going on with it, but what I do think that Riverdance was a sort of a gateway.
Mm-hmm.
And what I keep thinking about is that people need a gateway in order to get to the music. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is my feeling anyways. I'm not sure. You're a harper, and do you think that people need a gateway to come to that, or is it just so uniquely beautiful that people are drawn to it without having to have something super popularized in order to go towards it?
I think it's a little bit of both. I get a lot of students who come to me and say, I've always wanted to play the harp. So they always have that there. But then I'll have people that have never seen the harp, and they'll come up and say, wow, that's really interesting. How does it work? You know, I'd like to learn that. So I think there's a show with the Irish women. One of them plays the harp. So that might be something that kind of opens it up. It's just an unusual instrument that catches everybody's eye. And just to give you a funny anecdote.
Yes.
Claudia, who's in the band, we were in Ireland a few years ago. I try and get over there every February. And we were down in Dingle, and we were at a pub in Dingle. And my daughter Alana and I were in the back doing set dancing, and Claudia was in the front playing in the session. And it's February, and it's not that crowded. I mean, there were some tourists there, but it was pretty low-key. So after the dancing was finished in the back, I came up to the front and asked the session musicians if I could join. And I took the harp out, and I sit down to play the harp. And all of a sudden, the cameras come out from all over the place, and they're snapping pictures like and like crazy. And Claudia looks at me and she's like, "What?" And I said, "It's not me. It's the harp."
It's the harp.
They just see the harp and they go gaga over it. I don't know. It just does that. It just does that to people.
It does that to me. I mean, it's almost shaped like a heart.
That's true.
I'm in the studio right now, and we're looking at a harp, but it is an Irish harp, which is different than what do you call the other kind of harp?
Well, all harps that aren't orchestral harps are folk harps. So Okay. Everyone that's not an orchestral harp, those big harps that you see in the symphony orchestra, are folk harps. What makes an Irish harp of the folk harp category a little different is the column that comes down in the front, instead of being straight down, is bowed out, and that's really typical of Irish design. Also, on an Irish harp, you want a really bright sound. So these particular harps, made by a gentleman named Larry Fisher, he got it right. He's a Canadian harp maker, but the tension on the strings is light and the sound is bright, and that's what you're looking for in Irish music. So on other folk harps, you'll have different sounds depending upon what you want to use the harp for, but in Irish music, that's what we're going for.
What kind of wood is it made out of?
Well, he uses a couple of different kinds of woods. We have cherry and walnut. He always uses cedar for the soundboard, but you can pick out the kind of woods that you want, and he works around that. But there's the interesting thing about it has carbon fiber strings on it.
Carbon fiber strings.
Yeah, yeah, and which were, as far as I know, developed as Japanese by the Japanese for fishing line. And I don't know who made the leap from fishing line to putting it on a harp, but we're ever so grateful that they did, because it just, you get this nice ring without the high tension, and so you can move your fingers faster. And there's now, I think we have 6 of the harp orchestra members have Fisher harps, because they're just fabulous.
Oh, really? Mm. Well, this is sort of folk goes high tech.
I suppose, yeah, you could think of it that way. Although they're still handmade harps, so high tech and low tech.
A little bit of both. Mm-hmm. So it's an adaptation. Do you consider yourself to be, you know, a collector and a keeper? Are you trying to reproduce as closely as possible the music that you collect, or are you adapting it, or where do you see yourself?
Both, actually.
Okay.
As a teacher, I want to pass on the tradition in its traditional form. Okay, and I really think that you need to have that basis in order to branch out. Okay, like look at Eileen Ivers. You know, she was a solid traditional musician, but now she is all over the map with her music, which is fabulous. It's just great. But she has the core where it came from, and there's so many musicians that do that. So, you know, in my teaching, I try and pass on the tradition, but then I love to fool around, you know, and do different things with it. That's where, within the new, as we were talking earlier, within the harp orchestra, we have an ensemble. And that's where, you know, we really get to cut loose.
Yes.
And throw different rhythms in and try different chordings, things that you wouldn't necessarily find on a strictly traditional version of the tune.
In a few minutes, we're going to listen to this New England Irish Harp Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an ensemble, and it's also a very large orchestra, and we're definitely going to talk about that. But would you mind playing us a little something on your harp?
Sure.
Right here in the
Not
studio?
A problem.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Wonderful. I would leave it up to you as to what it is that you'd like to play. I'm curious. Okay. We could do it in a couple of ways. You could play, do you ever play dance numbers on your harp?
I do.
You do? Does it work well for that? Or
I don't. If I'm playing for a dance, more than 99.9% of the time, I'm accompanying versus playing the melody.
Okay.
Because they go so fast, okay?
Okay.
So that's a little, but I accompany.
You accompany.
Yeah.
So you're just doing like...
I'll do the chords, you know.
You'll do the chords.
Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Then we don't want to do that. But one type of music that you sing... Mm-hmm. And you've been singing your whole life. You were born singing.
I was born singing, yes.
Some babies cry. You sang.
I sang.
That's
definitely.
Nice. Wow, that's great. And you you go back to, you may have grown up listening to Irish Eyes or Smiling, but you went way back and went way traditional to a type of Irish music that is kind of, that's sung solo, called
Seanos
music. Mm-hmm. And tell our listeners a little bit about that type of music.
Well, Seanos means old style in Irish. So there's Seanos dancing, which is so beautiful, and Seanos singing. So I'm not an expert on either one of them by any long stretch of the imagination, but Seanos singing would have been a way to tell a story with the song. And sometimes they go on for 20 or 30 verses in a song. The really old traditional Seanos singers used to face into the corner because they didn't want to be disturbed by what was going on around them, and they had to totally go into themselves to really bring out the breadth and the depth of the song. And they would there would be no accompanying musician, and they would be using their voice with ornamentation and phrasing to get various nuances of the song. It's a really old song form, really beautiful.
And you sing that in that style?
Well, I attempt to. I'm not going to say that I'm a fantastic Seanos singer, but I certainly attempt, and I love listening to it and hearing it and trying my best.
So maybe you play, maybe you sing an adaptation of a Seanos style with accompanying yourself?
Oh, well, I wouldn't accompany myself in Seanos.
Oh, you wouldn't?
No, because it's unaccompanied.
Because I was going to ask you to do something Seanos with the harp, but you can't do it.
The two don't go together.
Okay, you can just sing us a Seanos song, though. Can you do that?
And then we can go,
okay, fellow listeners, we need to dismiss the harp for just one moment.
Oh, we're dismissing the harp.
Yes,
okay.
Just for a moment, because I thought you were going to play some harp with it, and this is what I didn't know about the music. I mean, I knew it was often unaccompanied, but I thought that you had somehow accompanied it.
Well, I mean, I do that, but I wouldn't call that, then that's not Seanos singing.
That's not
ballad
Seanos
singing.
It's ballad singing. It's just ballad singing. Sing us a little bit of Seanos, and then we can bring it back from there and add some ballad, and then go right to the harp orchestra. We'll go... If that's okay with you, will you share that with us?
The ballad stuff, because I haven't done that in a while.
Oh, all right. Well, but you're going to share with us some singing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
When you're far away from the homes you will soon be leaving. And it's many's the time by night and day your heart will sorely be grieving for the stranger whose land is rich and fair with riches and treasures gold. You pine, I know, for the long, long ago, and a love that's never olden. A stormachry in the stranger's land, there is plenty of wealth and earnings, wealth and gems adorn from the rich and the grand, but there are faces with hunger tearing. Though the road is weary and hard to tread, and the lights of the city may blind you, you'll turn us though for errand. Ireland's shore, and the ones you have left behind you.
There's some more verses, but we could go on all night.
Well, you know, I shut my microphone off so I could listen to that. I could just imagine what somebody who might have been listening to the radio right now, you know, flipping through the stations, might have thought when they hit upon that, it being so quiet and contemplative, very different than where they may have just come from on the dial.
Mm. It is, and actually, I mean, I haven't sung that song in a long time, and I kind of really had to force myself into myself to get down to the tune.
I like that. You are tuned to 106.1 FM WSCA LP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. Programming on Portsmouth Community Radio is made possible by you, our members, and by The Press Room, featuring live blues, jazz, folk, R&B, Latin jazz, and more, Monday through Sunday, along with appetizers, sandwiches, and entrees at 77 Daniel Street, schedules at pressroomnh.com. You're listening to Local Folk. I am your host, Stephen Kerrigan, and I am with Regina Delaney, who is a harper and a dancer and a dance instructor, and we haven't even heard her play the harp yet, but we are getting to it because she not only plays the harp on her own, but she has a huge harp orchestra that she's going to tell us all about. By the way, if you want to know more about Regina or the New England Harp Orchestra, you can go to reginadelaney.com, reginadelaney.com. Okay, that's her personal website with the harp and everything else. And then the New England Irish Harp Orchestra's website is neiho.org. Okay, that would be, and that is what we're going to talk about right now because it's okay. Big, right?
It is. It is. I just have to put a disclaimer in. I am really terrible about maintaining the websites. So if you go to the website and it doesn't look current, that's because it's not. But you can always email me if you have any questions or want to find something out. I'm just really bad about it.
Well, that's okay. You could just tell us about it then. Why don't you just tell us about what is the, first of all, what is a harp orchestra? Is this a normal thing for all the harp players to get together and make an orchestra?
Not really, no. When I went over to study the harp in Ireland with Janet Harbison, she was the founder and director of the Belfast Harp Orchestra. And so when I went over to study with her, there were a lot of members of the harp orchestra there, and they did a concert. Prior to that, I had actually gotten their CD. They had done a CD with the Chieftains. And as soon as I put that on, I just fell in love with that sound of all the harps. I thought that was the most glorious sound I had ever heard. And I really, really wanted to be a part of something like that. And I kept thinking that Janet would come over to the States and start a harp orchestra over here, but that didn't happen. And finally, you know, years went by, and I said, you know what? If this is going to happen, I'm just going to have to do it myself. I have no knowledge whatsoever of running an orchestra or anything like that, but what the hey. And so we did what 6 years ago, and we started out, I think, with like five or six people. We now have 15 harps in the harp orchestra, and we have two CDs under our belt, and we perform, and we just have so much fun because they're an incredible group of people involved in the harp orchestra. Everybody just cares for everyone, and everybody cares about making great music. So
you said how many people are involved in it right now?
15.
Okay, so 15. 15 are involved in there, and that's quite a sound. That
it's an amazing sound.
Are they all playing the same melody, or are there different parts
of
the playing?
No, I write orchestrations, so I write parts for the various parts. And some of the members of the orchestra also do some orchestrating, which is great. So, you know, my feeling is if I have someone who really wants to be in the orchestra and has a certain level of proficiency, I will write parts for them so they can come and join. Because to me, it's all about getting together and performing and playing.
So you didn't. You're mostly involved right now in this orchestra more so than your solo work, even.
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. But you didn't just decide to have an orchestra out of. I mean, you didn't just say, "Hey, I." One thing that we didn't tell anybody was how you went from being a nurse and an engineer to a full-time musician.
Well, a harp kind of fell in my lap when my children were young, taking piano lessons in the harp.
So the harp came to you.
It
okay,
did.
Mm-hmm. And then you had it, but it wasn't a magic harp with a genie. And I mean, you said, this is what I want to do. But I mean, how did you go from having this, somebody saying, hey, here's a folk harp, and then you taking some lessons, right, to...
Well, I would practice. The people in my family weren't that thrilled with it initially, and so I would put the kids to bed, and my husband would go to bed, and around 10:30 at night, I'd start practicing the harp, and I'd practice till about 1 o'clock in the morning, and then get up and go to work the next day, and I loved it. I just couldn't put the thing down.
Thank God it wasn't a trombone.
Oh, yeah, really? Or pipes.
Good night, sweetheart. I'll just be practicing. You're trying to kill something?
What are you
practicing? At least it's an instrument that's known for being relaxing,
yes.
Wouldn't you say? That, there you go, folks. If you want an instrument that you could potentially practice and would actually help your family sleep,
right.
The harp might be it.
My children would be funny if I was, like, really stressed out about something. They'd say, Mom, you need to go play the harp.
Mom, you need to go play the harp. So, but did you get stressed out when you started playing? I mean, that was in private, but then how did, you weren't a teacher or anything like that. What happened that you, what was your first gig? Tell me what that was.
Hi, we were talking about this a little earlier. I had a kind of a 5-year plan that in 5 years of studying, I would maybe be able to go out and perform. But because it's a harp, okay, and it's so unique, not often seen, and because I sang and I danced, I got asked to perform a lot sooner than probably should have. But what the hey. Yeah, so out I went. And so I think the first gig, I was playing with a flute player and a fiddle player, and we did some gig in a bar, and it was great. I mean, I really liked it. I was mostly just doing accompaniment, occasionally playing a tune, because I really didn't know that much. So, and then I'd sing and dance, and So
you were out gigging, singing, and dancing while you were nursing and engineering?
No, I wasn't. I didn't do any gigging until after the harp.
Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, I would go to sessions and play. I picked up the bar on, like everybody, right? That's their introduction into Irish music, get a bar on.
It shouldn't be,
but it is, right? So I had a bar on. And Mike Serpa, bless his soul, he kind of taught me some of the things to do on the baron, and I could sing, so I started listening to the songs and learning the songs. So, but that was just sessions; that wasn't performing.
Okay, so and then eventually you're picking up the dance because you used to do ballet, and you're doing the harp led to all of these things.
Yeah, I would say that it. That
okay,
it did,
and then the teaching as well.
Yeah, the teaching came. I probably was maybe playing 5 or 6 years when the teaching started, maybe even a little later, because I was a little reticent to people that asked me to teach them, and I just didn't feel qualified to do that. But eventually, And it's been a real learning experience for me. I mean, I learned so much from my students, and I've grown so much from teaching. And I just love teaching. I really, really love it.
But you didn't always know that you loved teaching, correct?
No, I didn't. I mean, although, I taught as a nurse, and I really liked that a lot, but I didn't put the two and two together. I really didn't. And when I started teaching harp, I really just fell in love with watching people have success.
You fell in love with watching people have success.
Yeah.
Especially with what it was that you were showing them.
Right. It's just when they get it and they're able to do it, it's just, I do the happy dances.
The happy dance. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have 16 harps that we want to play, and they got it. And you made a Christmas CD. I know things are getting warmer, but... By the way, as a professional musician, I have to let you know I am making a Christmas CD right now.
Yay, Steve.
Now is the time.
Way to
now
go.
Is the time to be thinking about Christmas. If you are a professional musician,
oh no, you have to be in the studio. You have to be looking at the studio.
You've
now.
You gotta be there by now.
Yeah.
I want to play some of this though from the Christmas CD from the New England Irish Harp Orchestra. It's a little. It's a three. Three different things. I think I'm going to cut in somewhere in the middle of three different tunes. But here, let me just pop this on. You tell me a little bit about what's going on here. Is this...
This is one of three tunes. The first is Chant de Noël. It's an old carol, a Breton carol. And then we go from that into the Mummers March, into McAllister's March. And I have to tell you a funny story about this. So there's 15 harpers in the harp orchestra. Only one had ever recorded professionally, and that's Mary Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So these are rank amateurs. And my producer was quite nervous about this whole thing. And we were also making a video about it. So, but on the day that we were recording, we recorded the entire CD in one day, which is mind-boggling.
This CD?
I've never done that before, yeah.
By the way, nobody does that.
I know. It was mind-boggling. But anyway, he was really like, why are you doing this, Regina? I'm like, they're ready. I know they're ready. And I spent months preparing them how to act in the studio, how they had to be dead quiet before we started, and how if they made a mistake, they had to play through it. You know, it was either my call or the producer's call if we were going to scratch it, you know. They couldn't say anything. You know, when you finish recording, how you have to be dead, you can't even breathe, you know. So we're practicing this for a year. We're practicing this to get ready to go into the studio. And one of the musicians in the harp orchestra is this man named George, who's currently 86 years old. And he started playing the harp when he was 81. So George, for the most part, plays just kind of drone notes, okay? But on the last tune, which was Silent Night, he plays melody because I wanted a really simple arrangement for the tune. I think the beauty of the tune is its simplicity. So I made this very simple arrangement, and he was able to play melody on it. So we start the recording process, and I hear a little bit of a mistake, but not enough to stop it. And then I hear a huge mistake, and I hear George say, "Oh, fill in the expletive."
Okay.
And the whole place, we were absolutely hysterical. It's like, yay, George, you broke the ice. That's fabulous. So that's what the group is like. They're fabulous.
Oh, boy. And then, but within the day, you had this whole thing recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. We're going to listen to this. It's a couple minutes. Let's listen to this and let our audience listen to this. This is 16 harps right now playing.
At that point, there were probably 14.
Okay.
I think, yeah.
This is 14 harps all playing together here on Local Folk. We'll be right back with you. Listen to this. Tuned in to 106.1 FM WSCA LP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. This is Local Folk, and I'm your host, Steve Carrigan, and I'm with Regina Delaney, and we are listening to, we just listened to a take off of the New England Irish Harp Orchestra, one of their CDs that they have available. It's called The First Star. It says Christmas, but does it even matter? I mean, in some way, I mean, what I'm saying is I was listening to that and I heard all the harps, but you could listen to this anytime, really, if you ask me.
For the most part. I mean, there are some traditional, like Silent Night is on there. There are some traditional Christmas pieces on there. And there's some Irish pieces kind of thrown in with the Christmas ones. So,
But if you want to hear more, because they have another CD as well, right?
Yeah, we have. We did a concert at the Portsmouth Athenaeum quite a few years ago, and so we have live at the Portsmouth Athenaeum.
So when you guys just go in, you just go in and you're like, ta-da, boom, let's just make this happen, and there you have it. I mean,
for
wow.
That one, yeah. Well, it was a year and a half's worth of preparation to do that.
A year and a half's worth of preparation in order to do that. Wow.
Because we have a third, or a little more than a third of the orchestra is down Boston and South. So usually on Monday nights, I would have been there tonight. I'm down in Boston rehearsing them. And then on Tuesday nights, I rehearse the group up here. And then, like, every once in a while, we'll have all-day rehearsal where everybody gets together. So throughout the preparation for that CD, that was kind of a continuous ongoing thing.
Okay, so you recorded it all in one take.
Yes.
But it's a long time in the making getting it. It sounds beautiful.
Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, everything that goes in behind it helps to make it be that way. Plus, your orchestration. You're orchestrating all of this.
I have a lot of fun with that.
I mean, it must be thrilling.
It is thrilling, considering I have no idea what I'm doing. I am very lucky to have a few people in the harp orchestra that really know notation and theory really well. So I write the music out, and they clean it up for me.
So it's like thrilling in a fly-by-the-skin-of-your-teeth
yes,
sort of way?
Yes, very much so.
And yet it all sounds so distinguished and nice. Hey, if you want more information about the New England Irish Harp Orchestra, they do more than just at Christmas, believe me, but you can go to www.neiho.org. And there really aren't too many things like this in the world. I mean, you said there's only about four that you even know of?
That I know of. And I'm sure there are probably more. I know two definite in Ireland, and I'm sure there's more there. I'm just not aware of them. And there's ours here, and I think there's a group down in the Philadelphia area. And there may be more. But
there may be. Yeah, there may be. So let me think about this for a minute. All right, let's talk a little bit about, you know, you created this giant, well, this large ensemble. I think it's quite a bit. You're doing great with it. And now within the harp orchestra, you're doing smaller groups as well?
Yeah, we have, we just started, within the last year, an ensemble of the more advanced players who want to take the music and kind of explore and go in different areas. And that's been such a source of pleasure for me, because it's like the whole burden isn't on me now. It's the group, because, okay, it's everybody's orchestration. Everybody can put things in. What do you want to work on next? I don't have to make all these corporate decisions. And we get to just really play around with the music, which is so much fun. We did a gig last Tuesday night at Phillips Exeter Academy as part of the faculty potpourri. And so I brought the ensemble along, and we did three tunes, and it was just a lot of fun.
When you say really play around with it, what do you mean by that?
Well, for example, there's a tune that we play called The Waves of Rush, and we started out in very traditional rhythm patterns, and then I changed totally. We speed it up and change it to an offbeat rhythm pattern, so it's completely different, and it's just fun to do things like that, or bring in some kind of unusual harmonies or things like that.
That's really neat. Probably it works much better with, you know, obviously you have to have all of these people to do something like that, but is there anything that you do solo that's also an adaptation of the traditional music, or...?
Yes, actually, one of the pieces I was going to play. One of the things I'm trying to get everybody to do is to learn to improvise.
Oh, okay.
Which, of course, we don't do that on traditional music.
Right. No. You know? Right.
So, one of the tunes we play is a tune called "Eile Heil Hún," the lovely fair Eileen, and it's a great tune for improvising. So, I do some improvisation with that within the piece, and that would be an example.
You have to play us a tune on the harp.
All right, I'll play that.
Okay, great. Okay, great. Yeah, let's listen to this. All right, this Regina Delaney, and the name of this tune is something that I can't even pronounce.
Eile Heil Hún.
Eile Heil Hún. So I need to learn this pretty quick. Thank you. Awesome.
Thank you.
Oh boy, that was really nice. I want to thank you. We're just about out of time here, but I really want to thank you for being part of this community and helping people to learn how to do this dancing and how to play the harp and doing your solo projects and bringing all these people together for a really unique thing for this New England Irish Harp Orchestra and you know, for everything that you do. Thank you. And thank you for coming on my show.
Ah, it's my pleasure. We'll have to get the harp ensemble in the studio here.
I would, if they fit, I would love to have a whole bunch of, I would love to have a whole bunch of people. I asked one of the harp orchestra, I said, you should come on the show. They said, you should get the, Regina on the show. So I said, okay, I will do that. If anybody in the community wants to get involved, and they love the sound of the harp, which, by the way, it did have that nice bright sound,
bright.
Really beautiful.
Thank you.
You can go to Regina's website, reginadelaney.com, reginadelaney.com, and there's some contact information on there, and there's something with performances and everything else. And Regina, you're also just super psyched about New England Irish Harp Orchestra. That's where we, that's where we're going with this whole thing, New England Irish Harp Orchestra. So please go to neiho.org as well, and you can learn more about that. Also, if you have any questions for me or about local folk, you can get in touch with me at scarrigan, S-C-A-R-R-I-G-A-N, at wscafm.org. All right. Now, Regina, I want to leave with some type of tune or song, and I'm wondering, I'll give you a choice between what we brought in here. We could play something Irish Harp Orchestra, or I was thinking Lucy Farr's The Boys of Balasadera.
Oh, sure.
Because, okay.
Yeah, Lucy Farr's is what I just did on the harp. So,
Really? Oh.
And then I go into The Boys of Balasadera on that, so interesting. A different harp completely.
A different harp completely. Okay, yeah, that's going to be nice because it's going to be a different take on that.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, tune in next week on Local Folk for a conversation with Jeff Warner, who is a keeper, collector, and conveyor of one of this country's great treasuries of folk music.
And a fabulous guy.
And a fabulous guy who has done a lot for me in terms of sharing songs, just being there. I mean,
yeah,
unbelievable guy.
He's
can't wait till
fabulous.
He comes on. Until then, this is Steve Carrigan wishing you all the best.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Regina.